I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Oh, thanks for making me watch this horrible episode. Fuck you both. I truly hated it. I hated it so much.
That's the effect we want to have on our guest, is existential ennui and anger, really.
Yeah, achieved.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
More like Ancient Phalians. It's a great title.
Thank you.
It's a great title.
That's a Toby Ball special. That was a...
that was an original.
That was a... There's no way we're going to use this title for the show. And then we did.
And there it is.
And here we are. So yes, this is a show called More Like Ancient Phalians, a podcast about the hit and infuriating History Channel program, Ancient Aliens. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon R. Reynolds. A person who has been known to be hairy and have a moderately large foot.
I wish I hadn't heard that. I'm Toby Ball, the creator of the UFO podcast, Strange Arrivals.
That's right. And today on our program, we have journalist, documentarian, and New Zealand resident, David Ferrier. David, hello.
Hi, very happy to be here with you boys.
You have come with your rage at being forced to watch the program, and that's the kind of, that's the kind of energy we want. Today, the episode we are doing is, it's a core episode. It feels like it's Aliens and Bigfoot. Two great tastes. It tastes great together. From season 4, episode 7, it first aired in the year of our Lord, March 23rd, 2012. What else happened on this day? Well, Pope Benedict, aka that last pope, said communism does not work for Cuba and he would be happy to help Cuba not be so communist. What else happened? Doc McStuffins, the children's program, premiered on the Disney Channel, which, by the way, also owns History Channel. Toby, I figured you had some relationship with Doc McStuffins.
Doc McStuffins? I actually was not a huge fan.
No.
It's a little much. It's about a little girl who performs surgery on her stuffed animals.
Yeah. What do you want? So why are we covering this episode? There are certain episodes that tie threads together. And by tie threads together, I really mean throw a bunch of threads into a pile and then basically walk away. And this episode does that stunningly well. And if we had a thesis, you know, trying to assemble those threads into something like a knot, it would be something like Bigfoots are criminals exiled here by aliens who are terribly dangerous unless they're actually just shy apes who are hiding from the real alien threat, which is us. David, we're glad that you're here with us today because you, among many of your projects, have dabbled, I would say, in the world of conspiracy theories. Is that fair to say?
I have. During COVID especially, I started writing a lot about conspiracy theory culture. And growing up, I was big into cryptozoology for a few years there. Big fan of Loch Ness Monster and, to a point, Bigfoot. Then sort of drifted away and became more of a debunker later in my life.
Yeah. So yeah, you're a journalist. You are from New Zealand. Toby and I were talking about the documentary Tickled, which... everyone I know who has seen it is like, that's absolutely one of the craziest things, period, that I've ever seen. It's truly one of those stories that I won't say too much about it because it starts somewhere and goes somewhere else so completely that it boggles the mind. It's really...
You don't know what you're getting into.
You do not know what you're getting into. It's pretty incredible. Were you, as the filmmaker behind it, were you also as boggled by where it went?
Yeah, super boggled. It was a real game changer. I was in a newsroom in New Zealand tapping away on some, I guess, light entertainment stories, which is the kind of stuff I covered. And then I saw a Facebook ad for a tickling contest in LA, which I thought would be like another sort of wacky story to cover about the internet. And yeah, I reached out to this company that was flying some New Zealanders over to LA to tickle in this competitive tickling league. And the response was one of, you know, anger. They were very angry that I'd reached out. They didn't want anyone sort of doing stories about their tickling league. And then they, which was odd because it was sort of a very public thing. It was advertised to me on Facebook. And yeah, as I sort of prodded, it got weirder and weirder. And they ended up sending a couple of their lawyers from New York to New Zealand to sort of talk me out of making the documentary. And it was that point where I kind of went, oh yeah, there's definitely something in this. If this tickling organization is going to fly a couple of guys to New Zealand. And yeah, it was just a really wild year from that moment on. And yeah, ended up making my first feature documentary and got into Sundance. And it was just the wildest, weirdest time. And it's almost reset my conception of what weird was, I guess, and just talking about Bigfoot. Whenever I'm talking about anything weird, I always think, is it as weird as that tickling thing? And Bigfoot, he's close, you know, he's close. Bigfoot and aliens, closer, maybe. Yeah.
At least with Bigfoot and aliens, you sort of know what you're going to get with tickling contests. There's nothing stranger.
Yeah, the one thing I regret about that film is calling it Tickles, because I think a lot of people think it's just kind of a 90 minutes of sort of wacky tickling, and a lot of people don't want to watch tickling. That's like a big turnoff. And so if anyone's listening to this going, Christ, I don't want to watch 90 minutes of competitive tickling, please know it's more of a sort of a weird true crime as opposed to a awkward 90 minutes of young men tickling under each other's armpits. That's just my little disclaimer for Tickled.
Have you thought of an alternate title?
It's a good question. I haven't, because it was sort of done and dusted. Our working title was The Tickle King, because spoiler, there's sort of a man behind it all. Probably, you could probably see that walking into this. But yeah, just something with a bit more of bang, you know, a bit more bang, a bit more mystery in that title. But we really messed that one up.
No, the vagary works for it. People should watch it. It's one of those stories that is just independent of time. Like, it doesn't matter when it came out. It could have been the 50s. It could have been 2040. Like, tickling is always current and weird undercurrent.
It's universal and it's always current.
Yeah.
There's always someone out there being tickled.
Yes.
It's true.
Bigfoot.
This is the longest tickle conversation I've had in quite a while.
We'll get more into it later. Bigfoot, Ancient Aliens. This is the program we're talking about. David, had you watched any Ancient Aliens before this?
None, which is remarkable because I do like this kind of stuff. I have a podcast about American culture called Flightless Bird, and twice now we've had guests. I found excuses to get guests on to talk about Bigfoot. And yet for some reason, Bigfoot and certainly Aliens, which is another big interest of mine, never watched it. And I watched it for you both. And I hated this program a lot. I found it so frustrating. Yeah. I didn't even find it charming. I just found it so annoying. It was like a series of sort of hypothetical questions, a lot of questions that are never answered. It's just sort of a style. And obviously you guys will be so well versed in this, and I'm sure it's the same in every episode. But just a series of questions. You know, who is Bigfoot? What is Bigfoot? Could he be an alien? Could he be dangerous? Could he be friendly? And they're never answered. And there's no clear structure. It's just a lot of sort of ideas flung at the wall. And you don't really, they're sort of maybe punctuated by an ad break, perhaps. Yeah. But my brain just sort of drifted in and out. I felt like I was hallucinating. It was a rough watch. I really struggled to hold on.
That's what we like to hear.
It's a perfect reaction.
After you've seen enough of these episodes, it doesn't ever become clear, but you start to see some of the themes, at least, that they're going to return to. And this one had a lot of giants. They love giants. Underground shit. hybrids. Mm-hmm. It's foundational myth. Animal mutilation comes and goes, but that's back. And then my personal favorite, the alien obsession with gold. Those are some greedy bastards. Now, gold exists everywhere in the universe, but they want Earth's gold. Just like, as we'll find out later in the episode, they want Earth's women, the aliens.
They always do.
Let's get into it. The story begins 1951 on a little mountain called Everest. The Menlung Glacier, two Brits, Eric Shipton and Michael Ward, find some footprints at 18,000 feet. And that sort of kicks us off with the idea of Bigfoot can be proven by taking casts and pointing them at cameras and being like, you see, feet. Therefore, something must have made the feet. You have a number of ancient aliens, luminaries, among them Nick Redfern, who says, why haven't we caught it? The obvious answer is, well, it doesn't exist, but that's not a possibility. So it could be supernatural or just really rare and live somewhere like Mount Shasta. We get a fun interlude with a guy who's describing the way it sounds, which is part elephant and part lion.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. I did enjoy hearing that description. And he ran, didn't he? He heard it and he ran because it was so terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it echoed off a hill that was like 2 miles away.
Yeah.
Seems unlikely.
Lion roars can go really far. So I don't know. David, had you in your studies, had you encountered, we hear a lot of different descriptions of what the Bigfoot sounds like. A lot of whistling and some shrieking, but I'd never heard the elephant plus lion theory before. Is that one you know?
No, don't know a lot. I mean, I felt educated about what one could sound like. I'd never really thought about what a Bigfoot could sound like, but at least we got a description.
Yeah, that's all you need.
There's a podcast several years ago about Bigfoot where they were talking about how big, I don't know, big feet, Bigfoots.
I'm just going to say now, I'm calling it Bigfoots because I like that better.
Sasquatches.
Yeah, you can call it that
too. Like make nests and they describe their like vocalizations as like chirpings.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Apropos of not much.
I feel like you could, if you could get a or see a Bigfoot nest, it feels like something that they would sell at, you know, like Pottery Barn or something. It'd be like Bigfoot nest. You can put it in your living room. It's kind of like the modern version of the conversation pit, you know, very 70s.
Have you been to the Bigfoot gift shop in your home state of California?
Have I? No.
No, I haven't been.
It's in between Willits and Fort Bragg.
Mm.
On this thing, and there's like you're just driving along this road, and off to the side it's like a gift shop, but it's Bigfoot themed, and it's also got sort of like a Bigfoot pride type deal, and it's got like the normal gift shop stuff, but it's got a hell of a lot of like Bigfoot, weird Bigfoot stuff. Anyway,
yeah,
and you also have an opportunity to take a picture next to a carved, somewhat cartoonish take on what a Sasquatch would look like.
You say Bigfoot pride, like a pride flag, or just lots of big feet?
Yeah, there's a rainbow flag.
And that's kind of cool.
You know, it says like Bigfoot lives or something. So, you know, that's cool.
Bigfoot lives and he's gay. He's a gay creature.
Yeah.
Well, at least he's open to it.
Yeah, it's great.
Wait until the Republicans try and reclaim Bigfoot.
Exactly.
All right. How do we explain why no one's seen Bigfoot? Well, they're going to kick a few ideas around. One is that they may have special powers and not be flesh and blood at all. There was a Montana rancher who shot at one that I would describe as a tall redhead. And it disappeared in a flash of light. And then Linda Moulton Howe, a luminary of the UFO world, says, if the Sasquatch disappears in a flash of light, then what in the world are we dealing with? And what do they want? So that's the first thing. Okay, you think, well, here, David, to your point, here's a theory that they're going to posit. If it disappears in a flash of light, then it's clearly not flesh and blood. Let's explore that a little bit. Or alternately, let's don't. And they choose that one. They choose to move on and say, they could be connected to UFOs. David, did you find that when you've been studying the Bigfoot that the UFO connection is a strong one, or is that more of a fringe theory on these fringe theories?
And my experience has sort of been a little bit off to the side. Fellow New Zealand Bigfoot enthusiast, Rhys Darby, he's a comic, Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big fan of the alien Bigfoot theory. He's always rabbiting on about that. So he kind of took the first little bit of this episode and runs with it for everything. You know, the idea that we can't find them because they're obviously flipping between dimensions or, you know, up and down into the spacecraft and that kind of thing. But from what I can tell, it's funny, isn't it? Because you've got this very niche kind of study of Bigfoot, which some cryptozoologists take kind of seriously, and then you go double fringe when you bring the alien angle in as well. It's like two sort of bits of crazy mixed together. So I'm curious if some sort of cryptozoologists who take themselves a bit more seriously would laugh at an episode like this, or whether they'd still be a little bit on board.
Yeah. You know, the self-respecting cryptozoologist can be like, no, there's a biological origin for the ape that no one's seen.
I also grew up in quite a conservative church, and we had kind of God explanations for a lot of weird stuff. So our explanations for UFOs in our church is that they were Satan, or they were Satan's little visitors. And so I'm kind of used to the idea of like taking a weird thing and then just sort of doubling down with some other weird shit to kind of explain it away. So I'm quite into this kind of way of thinking. Like, it's already crazy, so to explain it, let's just double down on the crazy, and that will give us our answer. It's quite a unique way to look at this stuff.
Yeah. And we'll get a few more layers.
Oh, yeah, we'll get many layers. Are they layers, or are they just more bits of shit thrown at the wall, you know? I think layers is giving it too much credence.
You're probably right. Yeah.
I feel like this is a moment to mention that a formative point in my life that has to do with Bigfoot and UFOs was the $6 Million Man episode that had Bigfoot in it. Is Bigfoot, UFOs, and the $6 Million Man, which at the time were probably three of my five favorite things.
Huh.
And what it actually turns out is that Bigfoot is a robot who was created by aliens who are hiding under a mountain to protect them from humans. And then the $6 Million Man fights with Bigfoot, rips his arm off.
Wow.
And then follows him under the mountain, gets knocked out, and is in a captive of the aliens. And if you want to find out how it ends, you're going to have to watch it yourself.
That is a truly hectic plot line you've just described.
Yeah. Yeah. It is like peak 70s.
Yeah.
Robot Bigfoot. That's incredible. Well, if it was a robot, and I'm not saying it was, but if it was, it would be harder to perhaps accommodate some of the theories that Philip Coppens gives, because he gives us a little, and David, feel free to take notes on this for your future cryptozoological investigations. Checklist of a Bigfoot sighting. You get the feet. It's a hairy creature. There's the smell, which is described as skunkish, I guess. It smells bad, but they just say it smells horrible. And sometimes you get sulfur, and sometimes you get some other kind of thing. And then the whistly sound that they make, which, again, chirping or elephant roar, lion roar stuff. Hmm. Yeah. Smell. What do you think, Dave? What does it smell like?
I mean, I imagine it smells pretty foul. I mean, you've got this creature that's out there in the bush doing God knows what. Well, the forest, you call it the forest in America, don't you? It's out there in the forest. I imagine it smells awful. I imagine you'd smell it a mile away.
Yeah. It does raise the question that I don't know that I've thought of before this moment, which is, what does a gorilla smell like? I mean, do they smell bad or do they smell okay? I've never been close enough to one to know. Same with a chimp. Been around monkeys. They're kind of gross, but I do wonder if people are like, oh, gorillas now.
Yeah, the last time I saw a gorilla sort of at a zoo, it was a sort of a distance, and I didn't get the waft. The wind wasn't wafting in my direction. It's a very good question, actually. Mm-hmm. Maybe they smell, primates smell clean and wonderful because they're smart and they clean themselves.
Yeah, they do. Okay, we get some names. In America, they call it Bigfoot or Sasquatch. In Florida, which apparently is not part of America, they call it the skunk ape. The Yowie in Australia, which of course, throw back to you, David, what do they call the Bigfoot in New Zealand? Or do y'all have one?
Yeah, we have. I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly because it's named after some rangers. I think it's like the Mohor Man. So it's a Maori word. It's in Te Reo. So it's M-O-E-H-A-U. And he, there were some reports in the 50s, I believe, they started coming out of a hairy man running through the undergrowth of the Coromandel. There were some theories put forward in the 50s that it was maybe an escaped gorilla from a boat or something off the coast. And then that kind of just got stuck in our culture. Now, most New Zealanders wouldn't really know about it now. It's nothing like the Yowie in Australia, where you say Yowie and it's like a candy bar and everyone knows what it is. But that was our version, was the Moho Man.
That's nice. A weird candy bar, I imagine. It's like, well, it's hairy and it smells bad, but enjoy it.
It's hairy and it smells terrible.
And having eaten some Australian candy, I can say that wouldn't be that weird, because there's some weird Australian candy. So yeah, Wild Hairy Man is where we go next. They take it to folklore, and we get one of our previous guests, David. We had Sabina Malioko, who is a folklorist and a legitimate researcher who has been on many episodes. And it shows the skillfulness of their editing, that she'll say very smart things. And then they cut it into being something that seems to push the plot along and seems credulous, even though she...
I was actually very curious about that. I noticed probably her and maybe there was someone else interviewed in this episode that were legitimate researchers. And I'm just wondering how much they know about the show, maybe when the show was starting, and if they're happy with how they're kind of incorporated and folded into this world. Because it's like, not to be derogatory, but it's kind of like lunatic, 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 academic. Who knows what they're talking about? Lunatic, lunatic. Yeah. And that kind of jarred me a little bit. And I was curious, do they know what they're in? Are they happy with being in this mix? Or are they just confident that they're not talking bullshit? They're just saying their little line that is factually correct, but it's in amongst all this mumbo jumbo.
What would you say, Toby? I would say they are resigned to the thing. I mean, Sabina started at the beginning. Like, they were like, we're doing this show, Ancient Aliens. And she thought it's kind of a lark.
Yeah, just had a laugh along with it, and hopefully got paid a little bit to appear.
That's why she did it. And so that she would record a bunch of different stuff. She never really knew what the episode was going to be, but they'd ask her to lend her folkloric knowledge, and she would talk about her thing, and then it would come out and whatever. And she said for her, it became problematic kind of in the advent of the Trump years, when the idea of like this kind of conspiracy theory, misinformation stuff loomed a little larger in the American conscious. And she was like, no, I can't do this anymore. So she did it for maybe 5 years, 2011 to 16 anyway.
It is funny thinking how, conspiracies and things like this used to be fun, moon landing, UFOs, Bigfoot. And then it all got a bit dark kind of during Trumpy, COVID-y kind of times, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very annoying for people like me who used to enjoy dabbling in these spaces a little bit.
You know, when I was doing the UFO podcast, I talked to a few people who are conspiracy experts, academics, and that's kind of where they were. It was just like QAnon just like is kind of rewriting the whole thing. Like, there's never been anything quite like it. So it's like this thing is kind of playing out in real time in front of us to look at, and it's just it's of a different scale and I guess import than other things.
Yeah, because I write this sort of journalism newsletter, Webworm, and I wrote a lot about conspiracy theories during COVID. And I just remember during this episode when Mount Shasta came up, the last time I thought about Mount Shasta was when I was writing about some QAnon believers in New Zealand who had gone down the rabbit hole. And they had sort of joined up with the Starseed belief, which is this kind of like alien sort of hippie cult. And these New Zealanders were off to Mount Shasta because that's where the alien energy was going to sort of descend from. And so when that popped up in Bigfoot, I was like, of course Mount Shasta's involved. Like, it's just like, of course it is. You know, there it is again. Yeah.
Mount Shasta, the guy that shows up at the party that you're like, oh, fucking Mount Shasta, here we go. Can I eat all the popcorn? Man. So the Wild Hairy Man has a long history in folklore, shows up in all these traditions that they breeze through, but essentially it's about a being that lives on the edge of civilization and may have some wisdom. They sort of allied the fact that the Wild Hairy Man tends to be a sort of stand-in for knowledge about nature, the thing that we're leaving behind as we become more civilized. Obviously, from the time of Gilgamesh, which we'll get into, up to now, they have special powers. Maybe they're Bigfoots. Maybe they are. But the important thing for the nature of ancient aliens is that it allows them the opportunity to return to one of their favorite topics, which is the Book of Enoch. David, you've been raised in the Christian tradition, and I don't know how familiar you are with the Book of Enoch.
Is that one of the books that was like cut out of the Bible, so people are very into it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I know, is that it's not in the Bible and it's a bit naughty for those in Christianity.
It's pretty naughty. It behaves poorly.
Yeah, it is a mainstay of Ancient Aliens.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say probably a third of the episodes we've done have the Book of Enoch in it somewhere.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to read this book.
So they're looking for giants, right? Basically, they're trying to find Bigfoot, whither he or she may roam. And they go, well, the Book of Enoch has these giants, the Nephilim, who, Toby, were they the ones that were made? Or no, they were the ones that came down from heaven, I think.
No, weren't the Nephilim the ones that were half ET? They're like the hybrids.
That's right. They're the hybrids. Yeah. Because they're sort of the assholes. But they're big is the important thing.
That's true.
Nobody says anything about them being hairy. Philip Coppin says,
now, the Bible gives some very little discussion as to really what they looked like, except the fact that they were giants, that they were big, and clearly they are deemed to be less worthy.
And we have something that we call the Our Girls Watch, which is the creator, I guess you could say, David, of the ancient astronaut theory is Eric von Daniken, Chariots of the Gods. And in was it his very first episode? It was one of the early ones we covered with him. He talked about how the Nephilim, how these gods back in the day came down and wanted to have sex with our girls. And he kept sort of reiterating like they were our girls that the aliens were having sex with and giving birth to these beings.
They had sex with some of our girls.
So anytime there's any kind of thing about UFOs or ancient beings having sex with human women, it's always, we always just hear our girls. And in this case, the gods saw earth women and thought they were extremely beautiful and had babies with them. That's Georgios Tsoukalos weighing in on how horny the outland books of the Bible could be. Those were the ones that gave birth to the giants.
I was just sort of shocked by the idea that aliens mating with hot human women would produce Sasquatches? Is that what we're supposed to be getting out of this?
That's what you're supposed to be allowed to have gotten out of it, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, what's your problem with that?
I don't know.
As many times as we've covered this.
It's messing with my thoughts about genetics, I guess.
Yeah, it is odd. Look, it's a leap. It's an odd leap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a plot hole, perhaps.
All right. So if we don't find Bigfoot in the Book of Enoch, maybe we'll find it in the Epic of Gilgamesh way back in the Mesopotamian times, 1800 BC. Little place called Nineveh. Gilgamesh, hell of a guy. He's got a buddy who, they don't say this in the show, but Enkidu, who is a wild, hairy man, started as his slave and then progresses to be a peer, really. So it's sort of like a buddy cop show at a certain point by the end of the Epic of Gilgamesh. He is got some wisdom. He lives outside society, so they're checking the boxes for the wild, hairy man. Tsoukalos comes back to say,
it is possible that Enkidu, this wild, hairy beast, this giant, could have been of extraterrestrial origin.
Because that's what the epic is saying, which I don't think the epic is saying that at all, but they're just looking for wild, hairy men, whither they can in world culture. David, you ever read the Epic of Gilgamesh?
I haven't, no. It's a tangent that's probably not going to make much sense, but the last time I thought about it was I was writing about a woman in Washington who's digging a tunnel under her suburban home, and all the neighbors were concerned because they sort of didn't want a human mole tunneling under the neighborhood.
I remember this story.
So I went to meet this woman, and she'd become a bit of a TikTok celebrity. Kayla is her name, and she just is digging because she loves digging. Anyway, I got really curious about humans' obsession with digging tunnels. And apparently in the Epic of Gilgamesh, there is a lot of talk about tunneling and digging into other realms and the idea that some humans have this sort of thing inside them that just wants them to dig to discover like other universes. And it all goes back to the stories told in the Epic of Gilgamesh. Sorry, a bit of a stretch, but that's the last time I thought about the Epic of Gilgamesh. I know nothing about it, except it has some trippy passages about tunneling into other dimensions.
Yeah. So Epic of Gilgamesh could be not. Sumerians, they also talk about Anunnaki, another big hit of ancient aliens. That's where you really get the idea of hybridization, which is one of the favorite tropes of ancient aliens. The Anunnaki created beings, and the ancient astronaut theorists propose that that's just a metaphor for them engineering beings out of mixing humans and animals, as depicted by the carvings on walls, where it's like a god who's got a person on a leash that looks like a dog.
Is this the bit in the show? I think maybe this is a later section where, to kind of make the point that hybridization was definitely a science, they just mentioned how some people in their hearts, they have pig valves that surgeons have put in there to help. That's kind of the proof that hybridization is a doable thing. They just said, here's a pig valve. And then it just moves on. Like, that's going to answer the issue.
Yeah.
They call them workable pig valves.
Yeah. It was workable pig valves.
You don't need workable in there. Just an extra word thrown in. Yeah, I really like that moment. I really like the moment of, the idea of pig valves being used as evidence of this hybrid theory. Yeah. If they can do it with a pig valve, they can do it with genes.
That was George Norrie said that about the workable pig valves. And as soon as I heard that, this is what happens when you grow up in the alt-rock scene of Austin, Texas in the 90s, is any like three weird words put together, I'm like, I saw that band. I saw them play. I saw them in Austin. It was 1997.
And they were great.
Workable pig valves.
Workable pig valve.
Yeah, the lead singer played a trombone and just screamed into a mic. Workable pig valves. Great band. Okay, so David scoffs at the existence of the Book of Enoch, but maybe he's going to be more amenable to the idea that in the David and Goliath story, Goliath, who, as we know, is a big fella, might be a Bigfoot, a hairless Bigfoot, apparently, but, that's where we're going.
Look, as we recall this, Halloween is coming up, and I'm going with my friend as David and Goliath. I'm going to be Goliath. They're going to be David, because I'm not that tall. I'm 6'2". But Goliath, big guy, but as you say, hairless. I don't know what the show, I guess that's the joy of it being Ancient Aliens. They just can basically go back and just pull out over the last 20,000 years any mention of anything kind of big and kind of go, this is proof. This is what we're talking about.
If you're actually taking this seriously, they repurpose certain figures in history for all kinds of different things.
Right.
Like we haven't gotten to Merlin yet, but Merlin's shown up in other things.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as like a big hairy madman. It was as, something else.
Also, they're kind of interchangeable, these figures. So I'll just like throw them into the gap that they need filling.
Yeah. That was the magic episode when we were talking about where does magic.
Yeah, that's right. The magic episode.
Magic as ancient. They're like, well, maybe Merlin was an alien who used the technology at the time.
Ah.
To help make Britain a country somehow. But that was the episode Sabina did, matter of fact, was the magic one.
That's right.
And she did have some things to say about Merlin, as she does in this. So presumably that was the same interview that they pulled that from. You have Philip Coppens, great quote. Whether or not Goliath is a Bigfoot, they definitely sit within the same category of a creature which clearly is not human, but clearly is also present here and is taller than our ancestors were. Okay. So Sukulis says, Goliath was a half-human, half-alien creature so terrifying that David had to do something about it, which, good on David.
No choice.
Good on David. Leif Erikson floating around. He sees some things that may have been large and hairy with dark eyes.
Dude, those were bears.
Those were bears. Or possibly he was just a racist and he just saw dark-skinned people with dark eyes.
I think he just met with all these native groups and then would see through the trees, would see bears who would like run away because that's what bears do. He was like, what are these strange, hairy Native Americans? That's my guess. I'm not a historian.
Yeah, it's a good guess. Merlin, hairy madman, wanders in the company of beasts, strange knowledge. Tends to be a metaphor for a person with access to nature. And, as civilization is coming online in these different ways, there's this real anxiety about the things we're leaving behind and what knowledge that possibly is. So you have these characters who, as depicted by them just not shaving, I guess, it's like, well, that's what we're leaving behind is knowledge of squirrels and how they operate and the presence of the razor, perhaps. Anyway, so maybe they've got powers. We don't know. Now, I know we talked about them being aliens before we've moved on from that, but no, now we're back. Bigfoot and UFOs. Here, we're really going to get into the meat and potatoes of this thing. David, you look like you've got something you want to say about that.
No, just thinking about the imagery in the show and sort of, because that's the thing, right? You've got to fill in 40 minutes and you've got to sort of illustrate it all. And I was just thinking about how bratty the illustrations are of any sort of UFOs on screen and Bigfoots. Like, just as a bit of documentary making, this is also why I hated watching it, because it just looks like dog shit, especially the UFO stuff. Which in a show about ancient aliens, you'd think they'd put more budget into some of the visuals around the aliens, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
What season are we in on this?
4?
Early days.
Yeah, so they probably don't have the huge budgets quite yet.
Yeah.
I've got that to look forward to if I keep watching. Okay.
Yeah, eventually you get animated UFOs that look like,
oh, great.
You know, Turkish temples blasting each other with lasers.
Oh, that's what I want. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, that'll come.
The general gist, because I was drifting by this point in the show, I think someone witnessed a Bigfoot coming off a UFO or like getting onto one or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that was there. Sort of in the 70s, there were UFO sightings in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's right. And Bigfoot sightings and UFO sightings would spike at similar times, apparently, statistically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So could be that the one is connected to the other. Not a lot there. Linda Moulton Howe comes back. She says she got a letter from a guy in Washington. Says a Bigfoot comes out of the UFO. And then I love this turn of phrase.
And the tall creature walks by as if he doesn't exist.
As if he doesn't exist, which is like, she's basically saying, you got snubbed by Bigfoot, man. Like walked right by. He didn't even acknowledge me. It's ugly. Sad. So the question is, if they're coming around, is it a clandestine program that's been going on for thousands of years? Are they being released by UFOs to mingle with people or snub them, as the previous story told us? We meet Franklin Rule, a cryptozoologist. So, David, you guys have probably met at your annual conventions, maybe? The cryptozoologist
convention? No, I hadn't heard of this guy before. And so I was loved to see who this guy was.
Yeah. So his thinking is that they were dropped here by aliens as part of a research project. My favorite quote of the episode. Another idea is that the Bigfoot creatures perhaps were criminals
or some other type of undesirable from an alien planet that have been left on our world.
I yelped at that theory. I thought it was fucking great.
Criminals.
Yeah.
Toby, criminals. We haven't heard a lot about criminals.
Yeah, so we're sort of like a planetary Australia. Mm-hmm. Is that the idea?
That's what I thought of as well, Australia.
Botany Bay.
Criminals. What the fuck did they do?
I feel as though I need more evidence before I can accept this.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, they make a big part of this episode is like how big feet don't really do anything to us. They're sort of there and quiet and we never see them. They're not acting like criminals. Although, of course, I think we're going to lead into the cattle mutilations, which is exactly what a criminal would do. They would see a cow and they would tear it to shreds and drain its blood. So maybe they have a point as I'm talking. Yes. Maybe they have a point. Criminals. They're criminals, clearly.
Yeah.
You have to wonder why they're here.
You have to wonder.
You do have to wonder why they're here. You do.
If this is a penal colony. Why is Earth a penal colony? First of all, it's a perfectly nice place. Maybe this is what Australians say. I don't know. But it seems like a nice place. Why are they here? I mean, why this place? Another thing, why do aliens have to cross the galaxy to have sex with our girls? Why do they have to come here for gold? There's so many questions about why Earth? Why can't you just do it anywhere? We don't know the answer, and we're not going to find out anytime soon. They're hidden, though. We know that. So we know that they're either shy or what have you. We have a little stop in at the Siskiyou Mountains in Oregon, where Elijah Davidson, one of the randos of the 19th century, finds the Oregon caves. And then there's some big talk. Now we're introducing the underground theory It's a big cave. Maybe this is where Sasquatch lives. There's no evidence of that, which you would expect. But at least we're there. Now, Linda Moulton Howell suggests that
maybe there's a tunnel system. And that might explain why you could have them in Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, California, all over.
Which is like Disneyland. I'll tell you what, this seems like a good time to pause and talk to Dave a little bit about his career. We've touched on some of it, but there's a lot of stuff that you have done. You mentioned, we talked about Tickled at the top of the episode. You mentioned briefly that you did an audio program, The Cryptid Factor, with Rhys Darby, which seems like maybe that informs a lot of your current knowledge.
I interviewed Rhys for the news in New Zealand when I was a reporter, and he had just been on Flight of the Conchords, and we started talking when the cameras had stopped rolling about cryptozoology and how he loved it. And so we started a little, it was a radio show originally on a local radio station, and the podcast is still going. You can find The Cryptid Factor now. I left to go and make Tickled and do some other things, but it's still going strong. But yeah, probably the first, that was the first podcast I did. And yeah, here at the moment, I got stranded in America during COVID. I came over to work on a documentary, and when I went to go back to New Zealand, New Zealand had closed the border to keep COVID out because New Zealand had not yet got COVID. And so there was a lottery system to get back into the country. Oh, right. And I kept losing. And after about sort of 6 or 8 months of not getting back in, I was like, I think I just might stay in America. And so I got a social security number and sort of chipped away at finding a place to live. And yeah, just ended up staying here. And I work on a podcast here at the moment about American culture called Flightless Bird, which is a name that no one really understands what it means. But the idea is that in New Zealand, a lot of our birds are flightless because we don't have predators. And so a lot of our birds don't even fly. They're just bung walking around on the ground, you know. And of course, I'm sort of the metaphorical flightless bird stuck in your weird country of the United States.
None taken.
Yeah, but I've dabbled in bits of other. I made a series for Netflix called Dark Tourist about sort of people that travel. Instead of going to sort of a beautiful holiday destination, they go somewhere where something horrific has happened. And so made an 8-part series. Sort of travel. It was amazing opportunity to be able to film that because sort of travel around the world and just worked with my little New Zealand team, a lot of them that I made Tickled with. Mm. And so made that and then made a documentary, which is on Netflix, about a weird New Zealand con man called Mr. Organ, which is sort of a very small, weird kind of character study. Some would say quite boring, but if you watch it in the right headspace, a bit stoned, I think it can be quite a trippy film to watch.
Yeah. Are you working on anything right now?
Right now? No, to be honest. I make this podcast, about American culture. We're about to do an episode about Dungeons and Dragons and interviewing an 85-year-old man that's been doing D&D campaigns for about 50 years now. And I write an investigative newsletter called Webworm, which is full of strange stories like the aforementioned tunnel digger in Washington, and other sort of odd stories like that. Did a story actually that's probably adjacent to this podcast called Spaceman Barry for Webworm about a man who, Noah, who moved in. He was having some sort of life changes and some life problems and moved in with this old man who had a spare room and lived with Barry for about 6 years and got to know him really well and had a really good time with him. And then didn't really know a lot about Barry's history, but when Barry passed away, he found out that Barry was a very infamous sort of predator of young women. And he pretended to be an alien from another dimension with special abilities. And his whole thing was, you know, for you to be able to ascend into my spaceship, which was near Mount Shasta, I believe, actually, I have to give you my special seed. And so that's how he'd get people to sleep with him. And he got out of prison, which is when my friend Noah met him and moved in with him. But he found all this out after his death. So that's the typical, very lighthearted kind of storytelling that I do on Webworm, which is my main kind of thing. So mostly I'm working on those two projects.
Going back to the Dungeons and Dragons thing, it seems like that Dungeons and Dragons has had like a rebirth or something. I don't know if it was around COVID, but it felt like Dungeons and Dragons was kind of like it had its sort of 70s and 80s like thing.
Yeah, no, it's back in the conversation again all of a sudden. To be honest, that's why I'm working on the story, because I sort of want to know why it's so big again and like why it's back. Because I was also never allowed to play it as a young Christian kid because it was evil. It was like a portal to the devil. So I'm very curious to sort of dive into that world.
Yeah, because it was such a, like, in the 80s, sort of a symbol of nerdism, I guess I would say.
Oh, the ultimate nerdism. And not in like a good way that it's celebrated today, but like I will bully you kind of way.
Yeah, I think the 80s were a lot crueler to people who had those kinds of interests.
I think 90s as well.
Yeah, and then now it's got this certain like kind of hip, semi-ironic, or where there's just like a chance to sincerely kind of lose yourself in those things, and people are sort of seeing the value of that. I wasn't sure if it was COVID.
I think the latter. I think I wish I could answer these things for you, but I think COVID definitely had people playing a lot of tabletop stuff again. Yeah. But I do think it's super sincere. I think it is. I don't think it's being played ironically at all. I think people that aren't just nerds are very much into it. But of course, nerds are cool today, you know.
Right.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Well, then let's come back to a place I call Russia, February 1927. If this episode has anything that is a bonus, that's not in every episode, but it is in a handful of them, it is crazy Russian scientist. And in this case, it's Ilya Ivanov, who says to himself, he says, you know what the Soviet Republic could use more of? Superhumans. How do I get them? Well, you got to inseminate apes with human sperm, or do it the other way. They breeze through this, and I think they go pretty light on Ilya Ivanov. They basically say, you know, we tried it both ways. We tried to inseminate apes, chimpanzees with sperm, and then they sort of hand wave the alternative, which is like sperm in human women. And then they say, if a top scientist is convinced that it's possible, then it must be possible. Now, Ilya Ivanov was a big player in the Russian Republic. He wanted to be popular. So he was good at breeding horses. I'll say that for him. He wanted to create superhumans, but he couldn't sell it that way. So he brands the research as a triumph of the atheistic humanism against the church. If they can make human-animal hybrids, then they're gods and they win. So he goes to French Guinea to find local women who will agree to be inseminated to create the new socialist man.
Wait, are they being inseminated by monkeys?
Well, not directly.
Or the
he was trying to find them, you see.
Okay.
And because the women of Guinea, kind of like women anywhere, really, there's a bit of a stigma around, you know, being inseminated by apes. So it didn't catch on is kind of the thing there. He could not get a lot of traction with that. And so instead, he tried to inseminate apes with human sperm. He could find guys. He can always find guys who'll donate sperm. Didn't work. And then it gets worse. He said, okay, I'm going to go back to the original one. So he inseminated Guinean women against their will, calling it gynecological studies. French government finds out, sends his ass home to Russia. He tries to get Russian women to go for it. No dice. And then in 1930... Again, this is good old Russia. So there's a fancy Soviet purge. He is arrested with other scientists, sent to Kazakhstan, and dies 2 years later, never having once created a human-chimpanzee hybrid. And that's why Russia's in the predicament it's in today. They didn't have enough superhumans. But then, yeah, David, as you said, that is the springboard we need to talk about workable pig valves as evidence that hybridization works, and it doesn't. So then we spend some time back in folklore where Sukalo suggests that maybe the Earth has been used as an experimental platform for hybridization, of course. As evidence, he presents the Indian half man, half snake Naga, the Medusa of Greek fame. And then the entire pantheon of Egyptian gods, all of them are half and half.
Yeah. Good go-tos.
Because, as he says, our ancestors depicted what they saw. That's the quiet part out loud.
I like the decision to take a picture of Medusa and then animate only the snakes on her head. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
So it's just like, she's like absolutely still and these little snakes are kind of twirling around her face.
That's those weird, it's those budget constraints again that give us such rubbish UFO illustrations and renders, you know?
I don't know why you would even do that in the first place.
Just have a still. Just like slowly move in on a still.
You can do, you can do the Ken Burns sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think what no one really thinks about vis-a-vis Medusa is what if she's not immune to the venom? In which case, you'd want to stay very still so they don't bite you. So if they're writhing around, no sudden movements.
If she wasn't immune, I don't think she would have made it to the ripe old age.
You don't fucking
being
know,
able to
Toby.
Duke it out.
No.
But I could be wrong.
Let's not fight in front of our guest, please.
Yeah, sorry.
And now, my favorite part of the program, Martell comes in to say the gods originally came here to mine gold, but they didn't like to mine the gold themselves, so the Anunnaki created the Enkidu. We're back to the Enkidu. Basically, they made Bigfoot as slaves, I guess, to mine gold. So, yeah, so there's your options. If there's any kind of synthesis here, it's why would aliens have brought Bigfoot here to mine gold? Or as a secret alien mission to test out the environment before they take over. Or, and this is the big twist of the episode that y'all should appreciate.
Or are humans the real alien creatures manufactured by using alien and hominid DNA? If so, it might help to explain why Bigfoot is so elusive. Not because we are afraid of them, but because they are afraid of us.
David, did you see that twist coming?
I didn't see that coming. By this point, I was sort of just overwhelmed with different theories, and it didn't land perhaps as heavily as it should have. I thought I was still reeling from the criminal theory of extraterrestrial penal colony that that Earth apparently is.
Yeah.
I like that theory, actually.
That's the other interesting thing about this. There's zero kind of pacing for big information drops. It's just like they're just talking at you continuously. There's no sort of big moments or quiet moments. It's all the same emotion that for 42 minutes or however long the show is, you know. I found that really hard. I couldn't stick with it.
Yeah. Well, as Toby knows, our theory is this is not a show that you sit and watch. It's a show that is on in the background as you wander around doing other things.
Yes, I think that is very, very, very fair. Are you both going to watch the whole thing, like the whole show? That's the aim?
God willing.
You poor bastards. It's rough. It's rough. How many seasons have you got?
There's like 25. I mean, there's like close to 300 episodes,
you
I think.
Poor bastards.
Wait, are we at 10th of the way through now? Are we at 30?
No, I think we're like 25. We got a fuckload left, dude.
At least those production values go up.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily make for a better show. By the time you reach like season 18, you're really looking for some topics. You start getting into the top tens, like Return to Antarctica, you know, stuff like
that. Yeah, I didn't realize as you both sort of informed me about how they're recycling through certain ideas and they come back to certain things all the time. That's rough.
Yeah.
It is like the Anunnaki, who I never heard
of those guys
before. Like, they show up again and again and again and again. Anunnaki, Book of Enoch.
Great book. I'm going to get it for Christmas.
God, it's full of treasures.
We'll do a live read of the whole thing for as a Christmas thing. That'd be kind of fun.
That would bring
everybody back. I wonder how big it is.
Book of Enoch.
Just read the book.
Get all of your guests to read like a chapter, you know, and just like comp it together. That's a great idea.
Yeah. All right. Humans are the real threat. If we've learned anything, it is that humans are the real threat, and the great apes that we thought were possibly menacing us are actually being menaced by us. And as evidence of that, there's proof of something called the Gigantopithecus, which is a 10-foot tall primate I think the question is, you know, that it did exist. It was the biggest primate, and maybe Bigfoot's a descendant. And that leads into, I'm not surprised by much anymore, but this last section of the episode was more or less a total rejection of the idea of evolution, right? It was like, this obviously can't be. How do you go from having hair to not having hair? That can't be done. How does your skull go from this to this? Can't be done. Clearly, humans are created by aliens as hybrids, possibly mated with Bigfoots to create humans, or Bigfoots are alien plus regular ape equals Bigfoot. It's all very unclear who begat who in the pantheon of all this stuff. But did y'all clock the fact that it, at the end, it was just like, fuck it. Evolution is no thing. If you can't figure out how you become hairless, then it must be aliens, like the Greys.
Yeah, I'd kind of drifted by this point. It didn't land in a big way with me. I guess it doesn't surprise me that it sort of goes... I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It's so anti-science, this show. It's all either aliens or sort of religion, right? It sort of leans into those kind of places. I just kind of given up by this point.
When they do science, it's like always this sort of science adjacent type stuff,
yeah.
Or it's just full on cranks. Like there's a lot of, like there's right. That one guy, I can't remember his name, but a guy who doesn't think that continental drift is real. So he has this like other theory about it, which would explain some stuff about Antarctica, but also aliens. So it's always, it's like never like normal science or like Skinwalker Ranch, you know, it's yeah. Like, you know, we went and we detected this or that or the other thing. Yeah. They don't do the thing, which I think happens on a lot of these, where they have like legit scientists come on and then use them as foils and be like, this guy's a scientist and he believes this bullshit. When in fact it's, you know, it doesn't feel like it ever gets to that point. Mm. Instead, you just have these like actual academics answering these questions. I mean, that was the thing that Sabina kind of brought up, is that they don't have any context.
Yeah.
For how these things are going to be used. So you sit in a chair and they're just asking you question after question after question.
Yeah, talk about the giants of mythology.
Yeah. And then, you know, so you answer them and you don't know how it's going to be used. And there's actually a part in here where they're talking about underground Bigfoots. And she makes some comment that makes it seem like she kind of is like, oh, yeah, that seems totally reasonable.
And I find that fairly persuasive evidence something is making those dens or nests out of brush.
And I was like, what question did they actually ask to get that soundbite out? Because I'm sure it wasn't like, oh, do you think there's like a continent-wide network of underground tunnels that Bigfoots go through to get from Florida to California and stuff? She's like, that seems fine.
But I like that it ends on a sort of surprising note, which is we haven't seen them much. So, you know, they always have to look to the future. What will change things? If humans are aliens delivered to Earth, maybe the Bigfoots have been here the whole time, or alternately, both of us have been created, whatever, whatever. But we know we haven't seen them. And as Chris O'Brien says, since we haven't seen them, it means they're intelligent. And importantly, what will change? Well, the housing crisis means that more places are going to be built and we're going to encroach on their territory. So you could look at sprawl as either a negative for the Bigfoots or a positive for us finally developing relationship with our possible ancestors, possible enemies, possible gods. We don't know what they are, but they're out there and eventually we'll be in their backyards or they'll be in ours. Where we're digging tunnels, apparently.
The one bit of the show that I did like the bit, and it was a bit earlier, you referenced it, where they talked about them being scared of humans. I thought that was quite a nice little idea, that they're like scared of us. Maybe we're the bad ones. I mean, I feel like that's like a good little idea to seed in people's brains, that maybe we're bad for the environment and the planet, and people are scared of us, and creatures are scared of us. That was the one bit that I sort of thought, oh, I quite like that idea. Maybe they're scared of us. That's why we don't see them.
Yeah,
I would be. If I was a Sasquatch,
I would be too. This hairless, horrible rat running towards you.
I know. And like either trying to shoot me and kill me or
impregnate me,
capture me, you know?
Yeah, the show is an indictment of humans, if nothing else, ultimately.
I thought that was a beautiful thing. Beautiful subtext of this episode.
Perhaps the only beautiful subtext.
And on that note, let's end on a positive, which is as good a one as any. Thank you, David Ferrier, for coming on and sharing your insight with us about all these things. Where can people find you?
My newsletter is Webworm at www.webworm.co. Couldn't afford a .com. And my podcast, Flightless Bird, is on all podcast platforms. That's I don't know where Tickle to Mr. Organ is. It keeps flopping around. So just Google it and you should be able to find where they are. They're on Pirate Bay if you can't find them anywhere else.
Yeah.
Google.com should inform you depending on where you live in the world, where you can find that particular weird journey. There's actually, we've also got a sequel sort of what happened after Tickled came out called The Tickle King, which is for free on YouTube.com, which kind of traces some of the weird shit that the main bad guy in Tickled got up to once we put the film out. It's 25 minutes of more weird shit and a little bit of bonus tickling.
Nice. Bonus tickling.
Bonus tickling. Just what we all wanted. All right. Well, great. Check that stuff out. Highly recommend it. That and Dark Tourist, which I assume is still on Netflix, probably.
It is.
Great. Great. All right. Thank you, David. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time.
Next time, a very special episode of More Like Ancient Phalians, in which we're going to be talking to two subject matter experts, Jonathan Young and Dominic Stiavu. So we'll be talking to them about what it's like to do 123 episodes of Ancient Aliens, the spiritual underpinnings of the real stuff that gets twisted into the Ancient Alien stuff, and a whole lot more, in which we go deep on being the real person in the room and surrounded by all the crazy nonsense. We'll see you next time.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, and tell us what you think about the alien Bigfoot connection. Are we the problem for them, or are they the problem for us? More Like Ancient Phalians is a Grab Bag Collab production. Our producer and editor is Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and our music is by Nathan Reedy.